Hi, friend. It's Brittany Moses.
And Ranella Kalagithi.
And you're listening to Speaking Our Minds, the podcast that brings you honest and nuanced conversations around mental health, holistic wellness, and the real complexities of what it means to be human in the challenges of today's world, where we have fun, fascinating, and meaningful discussions around how to live a more insightful, connected, and whole life from the inside out, joined by guest professionals, thought leaders, and some of my friends and those with lived experience. As always, we ask that you keep in mind that the views and opinions shared here are respectively held by each individual and is not a substitute for professional care or an alternative to seeking personal help from your clinician or provider and is ours to discern. We're so glad you're here. Follow the conversation on Instagram at SpeakingOurMindsPod and sit with us because we're diving in. This podcast episode is brought to you by WeShare by UHSM, a unique healthcare membership on a mission to create holistic wellness for the mind, body, and spirit. I'm honored to partner with UHSM and its community of faithful members. Together, we plan to create more awareness and programs around mental health and the role it plays in our overall balanced health. If you or someone you know is frustrated with their current healthcare, I encourage you to inquire about membership options at www.weshare.org or call 1-800-900-8476. We're here. We're back on a new season of the Now Speaking Our Minds podcast. Wow. And I have a friend with me. Her name is Ranella.
Hello.
If you've been following along on Instagram, we've been hinting at this surprise. But yes, Ranella is now co-host of the Speaking Our Minds podcast, which I'm super excited about.
I'm so excited to be here, Brittany. This
yeah.
is like a dream come true to work with you.
Oh, stop it. No, but it just made so much sense, you know, with the rebrand of the podcast, you know, and just thinking about like the direction that I wanted the podcast to go in and then us crossing paths and just kind of being on a similar journey, having similar backgrounds and just getting along so well.
Oh, my gosh. Yes.
Literally our twins.
I know. We're twins. We're so different, but we're also so weirdly similar.
I was just thinking that, too.
We're not sisters.
We're not. Even though we greatly resemble one another. Did I just pick another version of myself?
You did.
For the podcast? Is that egocentric of me?
I think we need to dive into that a little bit.
We probably should.
At some point.
I think, first of all, there's like so much that we have to talk about. You know, for this season, we agreed that we wanted to kind of talk about how to be better human beings in a polarized culture.
Right.
With so many views, so many perspectives, and how to still, like, love our neighbor well. And there's so much to talk about that. And we're definitely going to talk about that in this episode and biases and how they stop us from seeing the full person in front of us and having context about the world around us. But before we dive into that conversation, I really wanted to take the time to introduce you and then kind of talk about what the podcast is going to look like going forward. I know that there's a new name. Some of you guys might be wondering, like, what does this mean for the podcast? Like, what's changing? How much is changing? All of that.
Right.
But for starters, Ranelli.
Hi.
Can I call you that?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, so many people
was
call
that
me. Ranelli, Ranelle, so Nell, Nellers.
Just, I guess, for starters, for those who are hearing about you for the first time, tell us a little bit more about yourself, kind of what's led you to where you are today and the type of work that you're doing today.
Oh, wow. So I will tell you the type of work I'm doing today and go from there.
Nice.
I just graduated with my master's in counseling psychology.
Yeah, she did.
From California Baptist in Riverside, and it was a great experience, and that's where I am right now. I also do coaching online, and I work with people and their mental health. I create content, but to get to this place, there was
a lot.
A lot that happened leading up to it, and I'll just kind of like rewind from the beginning.
Yeah.
I'm a child of immigrants. My dad is Indian and my mom is from the Philippines. And I was born in Michigan in a little town called Berrien Springs.
What a combo.
Tiny little town.
Yeah.
And we lived in Michigan and Ohio, had a really simple, carefree 90s girl upbringing, which was great. And then we moved to California when I was in middle school, and that was a big culture shock.
I was going to say, that's very different.
Huge culture shock.
Yeah.
I have stories about that, but just so grateful that I moved to California.
Yeah.
And I would say probably starting in high school and into my 20s is kind of where I think for a lot of people, their identity starts forming. We're going to be talking so much about that. But for me, and I think everyone has different aspects of their experience and journey that form who they are. Mm-hmm. And for me, it was actually very religious. And so I come from, my dad was a pastor, and I grew up in that type of family, and gratefully, I'm so grateful that my dad was the type of person that really never made us feel like we had to be anyone different or prove anything, which was great.
Yeah.
But into my high school and 20s, I kind of got caught up in more of a little bit of a stricter environment, and that really started forming who I was all throughout into my 20s. And I will say that that experience really shaped my worldviews about myself, people, culture. There was a lot of disconnection from myself that happened during that time. And it's very nuanced. There were so many great things that came out of it. There's so much beauty in faith. There's so much beauty in spirituality and different experiences in life. But one thing that also came out of it was just a deep disconnection from myself. And throughout the next 10, 15 years was a lot of being so deeply skilled at knowing what other people needed from me. And being such a people pleaser, being a brown female, you know, that was just there to give of herself for other people, but being such a stranger to who I really was. And of course, that always kind of comes to a head in your mid-20s, late-20s, going into your 30s.
Mm-hmm.
Your brain starts really concretizing and is like, hey, we can't move on from in this way.
We can't keep living this way.
This is unsustainable. And so a lot of people find, especially now, this quarter-life crisis, identity crisis.
Oh
and
gosh.
I totally
Tell
went through it all.
Yep, same.
I have that medal. And, you know, it was hard times. Depression, anxiety, just feeling so lost, disconnected from myself, almost kind of viewing myself from the outside, but not knowing who I was. And that went on for several years in an intense way, and lots of deconstruction, therapy, healing, spending lots of time by myself, lots of time journaling, trying to figure out like what the heck went wrong.
Yeah.
And I'm just so grateful to be kind of more on the other side of that, to be able to help other people through that. Because it doesn't have to just be a religious context. It can be so many other things. And we're going to talk about all of that. But long story short, I was able to just really find more of myself throughout the last several years and realize that, oh my gosh, I love relationships. I love people. I love seeing light bulbs turn on. I just love being able to support people in their mental and emotional health, be able to connect the dots with generational trauma, the influences of society, so many things. And so that's what I do now is I coach people. I'm, you know, a therapist, and it's just been such an incredible journey. And now I'm co-hosting this amazing podcast with you. So that's my story in a nutshell.
Oh my gosh, there's so many layers in there that I want to unpack, but that would take up the entire show.
Yeah.
So one of the reasons I also loved having you on is because we do have very similar journeys, you know, of these different layers. And I think for us, while we're still learning, we're still growing, we're still figuring ourselves out, we are kind of on this other side where we can now have language for those experiences and now can articulate them in a way that we can piece them together, you know. And that being said, I think talking now about the Speaking Our Minds podcast and how that relates to this, right? You know, really wanting to, use this to have more nuanced layers, in-depth conversations around all the things that you were just talking about that you unlayered in your own story. Mm-hmm. You know, I feel like when I first started what was the Faith and Mental Wellness podcast, you know, there was a lot that I was learning. But since then, I've just grown and evolved so much in terms of, again, being able to articulate a lot of topics that I was curious about and that I was learning about but was still learning, you know, through. And so now that I feel like I've gotten more language around it, I want to have deeper conversations, you know, about culture and about the ways that our faith shifts and transforms in a way that, as you said, sustainable, that is sustainable. That is like my favorite word. It's just like, what is actually sustainable to live out when it comes to our mental health, when it comes to how we're showing up in the world, in our relationships, in our faith, in all these categories, you know, because I think we do spend a lot of time, especially in our early 20s, just putting on. And now it's deconstructing.
So exhausting.
It's exhausting. It's unsustainable. Who am I now? And just really showing up in my full self in the way that I was wired. And so I'm looking forward to, you know, the conversations that we're going to have here.
Yes.
If you guys were following along the Faith and Mental Wellness podcast and now you're following along the Speaking Our Minds podcast, we're still going to have these conversations that matter. You know, people are what I think have wondered, okay, faith is not in the title anymore. So does that mean, you know, you're leaving faith behind in the conversations? And that's certainly not the case. You know, as we are continuing to have nuanced and layered conversations around what it means to be human, around mental health, around culture, faith is a very super salient and central part of who we are. And so that's definitely going to be a core part of the conversation. However, it's not going to be the only part of the conversation.
Right.
We're also going to explore all these other areas as well. So I definitely want to clarify that. And then, you know, I think I also wanted to open it up to be able to have other conversations. I want to be able to have conversations about mental health, about culture, about identity, but also even relevant things that are happening in the world, you know, that are happening in media that relate back to the conversations that we're having. So even being able to have some more relevant conversations. Also, just wanting to continue the conversation around holistic health and wellness and how our bodies are connected to our minds.
Yeah.
That has been my jam, like over the past year or two, especially for myself going through various health things in my early 30s that I did not see coming, and how gut health has related to my mental health and affected that, and how, you know, trauma stores in the body, the nervous system, and just all of these biological aspects of mental health and overall well-being that I have more literature and articulation and understanding about. Those are things that I also would love to explore more on this podcast.
Yes. And I want to just kind of jump in and share what I'm so excited about.
Yeah.
In kind of my vision, too, going into this. Is I think that every human has this feeling that they want to have.
Mm.
You know, you wake up in the morning.
Feeling like P. Diddy. That's where you were going with this, right?
Not quite, but yes. You know, just like that feeling, you wake up in the morning and you go to sleep at night and you feel, you have this sense of, was this a good day? Mm. Was this a good week? Was this a good year? Based on this feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And the feeling that we're looking for is so ethereal. It's so nebulous sometimes.
Mm.
And I think that we have been deeply, as a society, deeply misinformed and misled as to how we truly experience fulfillment as a human.
Right.
So we've been kind of given this one, this like one way of experiencing fulfillment, and tying back into the mind-body connection and living in Western society, we are very disconnected from our sense of selves and from our physical selves. And whether or not you are having health complications, just being a human, living in this body and knowing how the connections work is so important. We don't talk about that in our society as much. It's very much being like a human doing and not a human being.
Mm-hmm.
What does that even mean? Because we are, you know, an individualistic society where it's all about achievement and success. And, but at the end of the day, we're human. And so what does that look like, feel like? How can we have a greater holistic perspective of what balance looks like and what really matters in life? And so that's a big thing that I'm really interested in talking about.
I love that.
And of course, we're two brown girls on this podcast. And
Wait, are we?
Excited. I know. We're like, are we? We grew up in America. I mean, truly. I mean, as you know, for me, my parents immigrated here. I'm from 1 million different backgrounds.
Same.
My parents grew up, like, they spent time in Austria, so they speak German. So we have a
little bit of that.
I know. It's weird.
As if your parents weren't cool enough.
We have like random German words that we say once in a while. So we're like Filipino, Indian, German, and then American.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, you come from so many different cultures as well.
Yeah, all these intersectionalities.
Exactly. And so we can't deny how that influences and affects us.
Yeah.
And has all throughout these years and affects our beliefs about the world and ourselves.
Yeah.
And I just think it's so important to unpack and unlayer that so that we can really be deeply connected to our sense of self and who we want to be in the world with total authenticity, not apologizing for anything. And I think that's just super important. So I'm excited about talking about those things.
The culture piece. I love what you're saying about creating a life that's meaningful, right? I think it's one thing to create a life that's that looks successful. And then it's another thing to create a life that is meaningful and how that is highly based around narratives. And I know that's what we're going to talk about a lot, too, is just the cultural narratives that we've come up in that have shaped the choices, beliefs, and attitudes and ways that we conform around how we think we ought to be showing up that might actually not be in alignment with who we truly are and what we truly should be doing and how we're truly wired and how that disconnects us. And so, y'all, this is just a little taste of the millions of things going through our minds that we want to talk about and that we're looking forward to talking about going forward.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, shifting gears because we have so much to talk about. Today we're talking about biases. It's like one of my favorite things to talk about.
Whew.
The underlying frameworks and perspectives that are operating, you know, really sometimes unconsciously that are shaping the way that we see people, that we see the world around us, what our preferences are, what we gravitate to, how we make judgments, how we make assumptions about people and the world around us, and just being aware of the biases that we have, right? Because our theme for this month is how to be better humans in a polarized world. And I believe that one of the ways that you kind of depolarize things is by being able to have a whole context of people. And in order to do that, you have to overcome some of the biases that you have about people and the world around you that you tend to lean toward. And so just kind of on a definition basis, biases are the mental shortcuts that help us make quick sense of the world. So they serve us in the way that they allow you to kind of quickly and effectively process information. But the problem is that biases can also leave blind spots. Because we're not taking everything into context. We are relying on the most kind of available information that comes to our mind or based out of our own experience.
Yeah.
And so we end up jumping to these conclusions.
Can I just ask a question?
Yes, please.
Because as you're talking, it makes me wonder why, you know, it's probably developmental.
Totally.
But all of a sudden you get to, you know, a certain age and you want to think a little bit more broadly and more nuanced. Some people get there, some people don't until later.
Yeah.
But what makes it so that we are so, so that we really want to just have whatever's available to us?
Yeah.
And whatever's quickest, like, is it the way that our education is set up? Like the way that we're fed information? Or maybe it's a safety, you know, it's a protective thing when we're young. It's like you need to know that, like, if a car has come, you can't cross the road. Like, we have to develop all these rules.
Yeah.
And the rules that we've been given from culture, you know, society, all of these different systems are what make us who we are. And then all of a sudden we get to a point when we're like, hey, actually, it's a little bit more nuanced than that. But it's just, I was just thinking, like, makes it so that it's just so rigid up until a certain point.
Yeah, I'm thinking from like now a cognitive developmental perspective when it comes to psychology. Some of it is just like how our brains cognitively develop over time.
Yeah.
So as kids, you know, it is easier to process kind of this simplistic or black and white thinking so that we can make sense of the world. We kind of need these rules so that our environment is safe,
right,
so that we can make sense of the world, you know, and it's just what we are more able to process. But as we get older and our brains are developing and we're also having more experiences in the world, whether it's through work or through college or through school, and now we're meeting people with different backgrounds and different stories, or we're being exposed to more outside of, you know, our previous knowledge, it kind of challenges us to think beyond our experiences and what we know. And so I think it's very natural as you get older and older cognitively to go from this black and white simplistic thinking to more complex thinking. Like, you should be doing that as you get older, as you're maturing.
Right.
You should be able to weigh, you know, more than one thing at one time, you know, realize that there are other ways to view things, realize that there are other perspectives to look from. Just a sign of growth and development.
Yeah, I love that. And it's, I think it's so easy to give that context because sometimes when we're talking about personal growth and trying to develop into better humans, sometimes we can like kind of pull this feeling of shame in when we're like, oh, we're wrong and now we need to be better.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, you're just developing. And now
it's
you're wanting
a part
to expand
of growing.
Your mind.
Yeah. And there's it's a natural part of growth, you know? So cognitive biases, by psychological definition, are systematic errors in thinking affecting how we process information, perceive others, and make decisions. So we have to realize that biases are really deeply rooted in our own framework of how we see the world based on our own experiences, our upbringing, our culture. So because of this, you know, we can all see the world in biased ways, and other people are seeing the world in their biased ways when it comes to the information that we believe is most likely to be true. There's this book called Thinking Fast and Thinking Slow by Daniel Kahneman. I hope I said that right. And I think it's a good book to kind of check out on this. But he talks about System 1 and System 2 thinking. And System 1 thinking is kind of that fast thinking. So we use it more often. It's where we don't really have to use any critical thinking about things. We use it, for example, when we're driving, right? You don't really have to think about how you need to switch lanes or things like that. It's your intuition, some might say. If you're an expert, you might be able to rely on this quick thinking more because maybe you've been in your world of expertise, right? But it is subject to error.
Right.
You know? And then there's System 2, which is the slow thinking. And the slow thinking requires more attention, you know, more mental energy and effort to process. There's more detailed and more critical thinking. So I think that's a cool way to think about it. You know, there's a System 1 thinking that's just quick, where we just kind of jump to things. And then there's a System 2 thinking, which is where we're slowing down. We're kind of taking a step back and we're saying, let's look at all the angles, because naturally I have a bias that's automatically going to jump to this thing. But maybe I have blind spots about this. You know, and when thinking about that, I can't help but think about just our culture today, you know, especially online culture with things and issues and topics that come up. And, you know, I'm wondering, like, can we talk about how prevalent this is in the social media world?
Oh, my gosh. It's so hard to navigate. I think it's possible, but it's this constant appraisal of how you're ingesting the information and how it's affecting your life. Because more than ever, I mean, we live in this society where it's like sound bites. And short, and, you know, and even
like
just
bait.
Being content creators, there are all these principles of psychology that, you know, when you share information online, you need it to be really clear cut and something that people, the click
is going to hook you in.
To do this, five steps to this. And it really does create this mindset of, like, you know, very narrow thinking and very quick and like, oh, okay, this is all I need, or, you know, very black and white and not as nuanced. And so we have to be so much more aware now of taking that information and being good stewards of that information and saying, like, okay, I watched a video on it, but let me go do a little bit more research. Yeah. Let me inform this a little bit more. Or maybe I just straight up don't agree with that. And that is their perspective. And I don't need to adhere to it.
And that's okay. Yeah, I think also being on the side of being a content creator, or if you have any type of public platform, you know, people also want you to respond to things quickly, publicly, right? They want you to have a quickly formed opinion about things that are going on, because they see your silence about things as you being enabling of maybe the wrong that's happening. And I mean, we saw a lot of this take place in 2020. And there were certainly things to talk about, right? It was certainly a conversation worth having. But I know, like, for me, when the higher the stakes the conversations are, the more emotionally charged the conversations are, the more I actually want to slow down. You know what I mean? The more I actually want to slow down and really, like, piece my own thoughts together. Do some more research. Do, like, to be able to even articulate things in a way that is wholesome,
right?
You know, and that does have context. Yeah, I've just found that there's also equally this pressure to quickly respond to things and to have quick reactions to things in the media and in the news. And quick reactions, as we know, is system one thinking. Is where you're just thinking quick. You are thinking and adhering and speaking on your biases, and you haven't usually taken the time to see other areas of the equation, and so you're prone to blind spots.
Yeah, and it can be an issue, let's just say, you know, bringing it down to a really practical, everyday situation. You know, when you're talking to friends or family, and maybe they're personally affected, or they represent a certain demographic or whatever that would be affected by your response. And I think that it is really important to also have language to communicate to people where you're at in total authenticity. And yet sometimes for this fast-paced, like, culture and society, that's even not enough to just be able to say, like, I'm still sitting with this. Because it's like, well, you should already know, you know. But at the same time, it's like, hey, you have to own where you're at and own what you've researched and own where your perspective is. Just being completely authentic to where you're at, but also then going and doing that research and being willing to kind of go into spaces that maybe don't affect you as much too, just to be able to understand other people's perspectives.
I've had a lot of practice with this because does anyone else have that one person where it's like anything that they hear, you know, on the news, on YouTube, on whatever, they, like, bring it up to you like it is God's truth. You know, they're just like, oh, I heard this thing. Did you hear about this? Well, you know this is happening. Well, you know they're doing this now. And, like, every time I go in background check, this person is telling me, like, 10% of the story. You know what I mean? And you go back and you're like, that's actually not really what this story was saying. That's not actually what really happened. These are actually not the facts surrounding this. So then now I got used to actually saying, because they do this, like, often. I got used to just saying, oh, that's interesting. You know, thank you for sharing that with me. I actually don't know how I feel about this right now because I have to go look for myself. Like, I hear you, and I haven't gotten the chance to, but I need to look more into this for myself. You know, because I think it's easy to match the emotional charges of just like, oh, yeah, that's horrible, da-da-da-da-da. But I think it's also okay to say, oh, man, that sounds horrible. I actually don't know anything about this right now, or I don't know enough about this, and I just need to look more into things myself. And that's kind of also how you combat some of these automatic biases as well.
And I think when you're able to do that outwardly with others, I mean, I think that the way that you're able to do that outwardly is if you adopt that internal way of being. And again, going back to really fast-paced, fast-changing Western society, it can be even harder to adopt a spirit of being calm.
Of slowness.
Of actually just, being slow, being able to stop and feel and think and just try to figure out how this is going to affect other people. But it does start kind of inside. And so I think that's kind of what we're trying to bring forward is like, what is that internal thinking?
Yeah.
Bring that to the surface, because a lot of us don't learn this in school or don't have it as part of our culture. So
yeah.
What are some of these biases?
Yeah. You know, I really want to quickly say, because I think that this concept is really interesting, and it's something called the double curse of incompetence. This is something that always stuck with me in my psychology courses.
Oh, interesting.
It's also called the Dunning-Kruger effect. And it's basically the idea that we don't know what we don't know. Mm-hmm. And because of that, it actually makes us more prideful in what we know.
Yeah.
Isn't that amazing?
It's crazy.
Yeah. So basically we overestimate how much we know because we don't have the ability to assess our own competence correctly on the things that we're missing. So, I mean, I think about this just like I'm thinking about myself 5-10 years ago. I was so confident in a lot of things that I was saying, that I was believing. It's so cringe. Do not look back. On the things I was saying. And it was some of the stuff I was saying was just very black and white, right? And I was so confident. And then to where I am now, I'm like, wow, I didn't know what I didn't know. You know? Yeah.
The more you know, the more you're like,
You realize how much you don't know.
Yeah.
And the more it just humbles you. Mm-hmm. And I think being humbled over those years has made me slow down and be like, oh, wait, like I have biases. Like, I can't just jump to these things because there might be things that I don't know. So just being aware of kind of what we call the double curse of incompetence, which is the fact that you can be like super prideful. What I have found is that actually the less someone knows, the more like obstinate and stubborn and kind of prideful they are about what they're saying because they're not willing to look at what they don't know, or they believe that they know all there is to know.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right.
And I'm always like a submarine. I'm always like way down here thinking super deeply. And like when you said that, you know, they can't admit, right? They can't admit that, or they don't want to admit that they don't know. I think that goes down into this like deeper issue of people, and I think we see this a lot, whether it's because of your position, whether because now you're a teacher or a leader or a parent or whatever it is, the humiliation that you would have to experience by being wrong is too much, and it's too vulnerable.
Right.
And I really think that we are facing a society that doesn't know how to accept and embrace the vulnerability of just being a human and being a learner and not knowing everything.
Yeah.
But I think it's a really beautiful thing.
Yeah.
Vulnerability is so beautiful and so deep. And when you can tap into the fact that, hey, I don't know everything and that's okay. And I want to learn from you. And in fact, the people that I think I'm teaching probably have so much to teach me.
Right.
That mindset shift in life.
Right.
No, I mean, that's what makes great leaders too, are the people that are willing to say like, I don't know everything and we're all learning together and we're going to take our collective wisdom and try to go somewhere with it. And so I think it's a very deep internal emotional experience that we have to tap into as individuals, is the willingness to say, oh my goodness. And this goes into so many other.
I'm thinking of so many things right now.
So many other areas of life where we build up walls, and when we have, you know, that thinking where we're better than other people, this makes it so difficult to have that mindset.
Yeah.
But I think that's the only way to truly start navigating life in a way that's aligned, authentic, and healthy as a human, is being willing to say, I don't know everything. And that's okay. There's no shame in that at all.
That's so well said. And, you know, I'm also thinking about how today, now it feels like the stakes are higher, because now we live in a social media online world where when you share these things, you have a digital footprint now, you know, of the things that you've said.
Right.
And so, you know, So then you can look back, and then it's like you do have to reassess some things. But then also,
do you ever get those Facebook? I'm not on Facebook very much anymore.
Memories,
but like the memories from 8 years ago, and I'm like,
no.
Who was that?
I was unhinged. Don't even look, because I already locked all my past posts.
I can't even think of it.
It was horrendous.
I know.
But
it's great.
All that to say, too, there's this other side, though, right? And I know we're going to have this conversation this month with Michael Nelder about cancel culture, mm-hmm. right? Because on the one side, we want to say, yeah, it's okay for people to learn. It's okay for people to grow. But are we also letting people do that?
Yeah.
That's the other side of the conversation. Are we letting people who maybe had problematic, you know, toxic or harmful thinking, you know, and share those publicly, are we also allowing them the space for redemption and recovery?
Yeah.
And are we allowing people to be wrong and to learn from those wrongs too?
Oh,
because that's
so
we
hard.
Also need a rehabilitation culture.
Yes.
You know, I'm kind of pro rehabilitation culture versus cancel culture, right? Because that also keeps the stakes high, where people then don't want to admit that they didn't know something, or that they didn't handle something correctly, or that they didn't approach things the right way,
yeah.
you know, because they'll double down because of the attacks that now
right.
come your way.
Exactly.
That completely cancel mm-hmm. you. And when someone's canceled, it's almost like that's it. Like, we're never listening to them again, or
right.
their voice, or what have you, you know.
And yeah. And of course, I'm sure that. We'll
and even
go...
if, sorry, even if people mm-hmm. apologize, it's like, was that apology enough? Now
right.
we're judging if they really did change. And I get it.
Right.
Like, there does need to be space to right your wrongs mm-hmm. and to prove that change.
Yes,
but
absolutely. It's nuanced.
There's a balance, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
yeah. And I'm sure we'll get so much more into that
we
in
will.
That episode. But absolutely, there's that balance of accountability, of
yeah.
nuance, and yet redemption.
And grace and redemption.
Yeah, which is so hard, even in personal relationships.
Yeah. yeah.
That can be really, really difficult, even if it's not just someone, some celebrity that we're canceling. It's like in
yeah.
personal relationships, how do you have that mindset? So much.
Something to keep in mind.
Whew. So why are we even talking? I hate you.
Why are we even talking, period?
Why
are we
talking
right now?
Literally, why are we here? So why are we even talking about biases? Because I really think that the topic of biases, how we view the world, the kind of the way that we come with all our set beliefs,
mm-hmm.
they impact everything. They impact our relationships. They impact our own sense of self. When we are not willing to confront and have a way of being in a perspective of, I'm a learner, I don't know everything, I have, you know, I am just here to learn from you.
Yeah.
We come to our relationships with this, with so many complex emotions
yeah.
that are not helpful to relationships, when we can't have that vulnerability and that inner sense of, I know who I am, and I know who you are, and I see you with compassion. I see you with grace. I see you with openness.
With complexity.
Complexity.
With nuance.
And you know what the thing is I really do think that sometimes we do not come to the world with that sense of complexity and nuance.
Right.
Because we can't see it within ourselves.
Right. We haven't,
developed
it
how.
Yet. Yeah.
And so a lot of times the people who are hardest on others, and who do kind of have those walls of separation, and who see life in a very black and white way.
Yeah.
I have pity, because I feel that. I was there.
Mm-hmm.
And I have pity because most likely they see themselves in that way.
Yeah.
They hold themselves to such a high standard.
Yeah.
They hold themselves to a place of black and white thinking that is not nuanced. And it leads us to creating these deep-seated beliefs about ourselves that
yeah.
don't give us room to be human. That don't give us room to actually grow,
yeah.
learn, and say, hey, I made a mistake, and
yeah.
I need to learn from this. And so I think that's one of the reasons why this topic is so important, is because it really does affect our relationships.
Right. And it further polarizes
yes.
us. Because I'm the type of person, you know, growing up as a girl in L.A., I was always just surrounded around diversity, around people with different backgrounds, ethnicities, beliefs. You know, the schools I was in early on was not very diverse. But in general, like the community that I was around, the city that I was raised in, especially as I was a teenager, you know, that was always kind of my friend group, is just having a variety of people that I was surrounded with. I was actually in musical theater, so a lot of quirky musical theater kids that were just very strange and all over the place, and I love it. Like, quirky people are my people.
Yes.
But that being said, so for me, I was just always used to differences, you know? And it's like accepting those differences, respecting those differences, you know? And so that's just what I was used to. So I think that the issue with biases, especially when it comes to people, is that it can really turn them into an us versus them, kind of this tribal thinking, if you don't learn the skill of seeing people as whole and complex people, right? So in my own personal life, I have friends and loved ones who are Republican, who are Democrat, who are liberal, who are progressive, who are conservative, who are whatever labels that you want to name those. And across the board, I don't always agree with every single view about every single thing. But at the end of the day, I can look at the people in my life and say, but there is more to them than this one view. There is more to them than this one perspective. There is more to them than the way that they vote or the way that they believe this, right? I'm able to take into context, you know, the other dynamics of them that make them beautiful, that the way that I have seen them love people, the way that I do see that they're well-intentioned and well-meaning, you know, and really even just the experiences that led them to the logic that they have to this day makes sense. Sometimes you can look at people and say, oh yeah, like based on like where you grew up and where you were raised and what you were raised around and the communities you were in and what you heard, and like it makes sense, or what you do for a living, or it makes sense that you think this way. That's how I've always seen people. It's like based on these complexities and intersections of your life, it makes complete sense, actually, that you think this way. It makes complete sense that you view things this way. And while I don't agree, also based on my biases and the complexities that have made me who I am, you know, there are things that I see differently or feel passionate about differently, you know, and that's okay.
Yes. And I think that's the key, is being able to recognize that one aspect, one belief, one part of someone. It's just really
one part.
It's not
the whole.
I think that that is the key, is to be able to recognize that we are a mosaic.
Yeah.
Right? We're not just that one thing.
Yeah.
Not that one political belief. Not that one, you know, religious belief. You're not your, you know, gender. You're not your race. You're not any of these identities. And that's not all of who you are.
Right.
You're so much more. And I think, again, going back to how we view ourselves, it starts here.
Yeah.
The people who can't see it, the people who look at others and say, this is what makes up who you are, and I don't like you because of that.
Yeah.
There's something within themselves that they're deeply trying to run away from, that they don't like because they think it makes them, makes up who they are.
Or like they've categorized people who are associated with that thing as harmful, because maybe they've had like a traumatic or harmful experience with them. And so now anyone who aligns with that type, with that persona, is now immediately kind of an enemy as well.
And it's so important to be able to tap into that nuance and be able to look at ourselves and others in a much more a much more nuanced way, because we all come with these beliefs growing up. They're all fed to us from all our different influences, and those beliefs are what creates our filter.
Right.
So we all have these glasses on. And
we all have different filters.
We all have different filters.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about this more, but when you come from a culture or a context that teaches you that your filter is the right filter,
is the only filter,
and everyone else's filter is wrong, that, oh my gosh,
that's where you get the superiority complex. That's where you actually can dehumanize people.
Exactly.
And when you start dehumanizing people, that can get dangerous, like, down the road.
Absolutely.
Here's the thing, though. There was a time that this type of thinking served us, and that's why it's carried over to today, right? Mm-hmm. So we have to think about our human history as to why biases exist in the first place and why we have this kind of in-group, out-group, us versus them mentality. And that is that as human beings, we came originally from a tribal culture. You know, where we had our alliances and survival. We had our enemies for means of survival. Right. You had to know who your people were, that was your family, that was your safety, that was your provision. It literally was your survival. You depended on one another within your village, within your community, within your tribe in order to survive. So there had to be this kind of conformity, you know, within that group. And then you kind of had to know who your enemies were, you know, for your survival. But the problem is now we are in a modern day culture and we're kind of still operating from that primitive side of our brains. We're operating from the in-group, out-group.
Right. And we also, you know, obviously in the last, you know. We're operating from a place now where we have planes, trains, and automobiles, and we can go anywhere and meet any culture and be immersed.
Literally my favorite part of life.
Yes! I know. I love traveling the world. But yeah, and it's incredible because then your perspective opens.
Yes.
You meet those people who have literally never traveled. And sometimes some people can't, and that's fine.
Yeah.
But totally recognize for that. Those, you know, there are some people who just like, they're like, all I need is right here in America. And there's no.
I'm sorry. What is that accent?
This is the Ohio in me coming out.
Automatic.
I don't
America.
Like...
Lambda free, home of the brave.
Yeah. You know, and it's like, we live in a society now where we can travel. Back then.
Right.
They're the enemy. Or they're the ones that are trying to take over, or
they're the redcoats.
They need what we have, and so they're going to take it by force, right?
Oof.
And so we are kind of navigating this space now in the last few centuries or the last,
but
you know,
we still have the tribal mindset. Yeah, it goes to show, like, we think we're so special and different than human beings in the past, but we're all just, like, still recycling, you know, and operating in these frameworks of humanity and humanness.
Yes. And Americans are not helpful.
Oh, that's a large statement.
I'm so sorry. I'm like, should I say that?
Dead.
The American mindset, the Western, I should say, Western mindset.
I have a whole...
The Western...
Our episode on culture. And
yes.
I literally have a whole...
Yeah.
Historical thing to talk about the superiority complex of westernizing the world and how that
dates back to Hellenism. We can go there in another episode. But so in Western thinking does not help, because we have
a
kind
superiority
of
superiority complex.
I'm Indian Filipino, but I grew up in America, and I was like, America is the best. You know, and I'm over here like, I really appreciate America.
I love America.
Whenever I travel, I'm like, oh my gosh, I want wider beds and bigger rooms in my hotel rooms. I want all my luxuries back, you know?
You're like, but at the same time, there are perks of capitalism, just a little bit.
Ketchup, you know? But at the same time,
there
are things that there's the dark side of it too.
Nothing is black and white.
Nothing is
Again,
black
it's
and white.
All nuance. I feel you on that. I'm like, I love America. I'm American. I have a very American cultural way of thinking and
very
way of
grateful,
life.
But
I'm also very, very aware and open to other cultures, other ways of being.
Mm-hmm.
And that this is not the only way to be and live and exist
in the
world.
Well, it's sort of like when you grow up and you're like, my parents are perfect. They're amazing. They can do no wrong. And then all of a sudden, you're like 15, you're like, oh.
They're really human.
Like, that's what my kids are going to be
like.
But I
love them.
Yes. Yeah, so it's
death.
Like this almost this.
But they're also
process.
Very human. That's a really great
yes.
parallel to how people are feeling about America.
You start realizing how it's affected you, that superiority complex, the
yes.
fast-paced, capitalistic,
yeah.
all of that. It's affected you in very real ways
yeah.
that you didn't realize. And
yeah.
then there's a little bit of a little grieving process.
Yeah.
You know?
You're like,
that
oh,
you
it's not perfect here.
Right. And then you get to the nuance
yeah.
of it's both. It's, you know, nothing is black and white.
That's just like humans. It's just like how mm-hmm. we are. It's like nothing's perfect. There are some not great sides and there are some really great sides. And it's the same way here and with people and everyone. So that being said, let's dive into like some actual cognitive biases.
Mm-hmm. There's so many.
There's
so
many.
These are just a few.
These are just a few. Am I just repeating everything you're saying?
I love it.
Coin it. That was my idea. So the first psychological bias I want to talk about is confirmation bias.
Mm-hmm.
It's my favorite. It's your favorite Psych 101 if you ever take a course bias that they talk about. And that's basically people's tendency to process information by looking for or interpreting information that is consistent with your already existing beliefs, but you're also discounting evidence that doesn't confirm what you believe. So basically, you are already looking out in the world, out in people, out in
right.
news, out in media. You're already looking at things in terms of how they interpret, in terms of how they confirm. That's why it's the confirm and confirmation bias. You're looking for things that already confirm what you already think and believe. And in the meantime, you're discounting, you know, other evidence
yeah.
that isn't aligning with that. That may also be prevalent.
Yeah. And that is a pattern of thinking that can be widened and undone and,
yeah.
you know, nuanced.
Yeah.
But that is a pattern of thinking.
It's so easy to do.
Mm-hmm.
I think I do it all the time.
We all do.
We all do it all the time. And sometimes I have to catch myself. I'm like, confirmation bias. For example, I just want to give some examples. So my favorite example of confirmation bias is like when everyone started getting Teslas here in California, Los Angeles.
Yes.
And I would turn to my husband. I would turn to Jason. I'd be like, everybody has a Tesla. And then when we're driving, I'm like, see, there's another Tesla. See, there's another
right.
Tesla. Like every time we see a Tesla, I would point to it as proof that everyone has a Tesla. When in reality, there's so many more people who do not have
right.
Teslas. But that is like the epitome of confirmation bias. Like you're like, see, everyone has this thing. Or see, this is true. And then you're just pointing out everything that confirms that truth, but you're discounting everything else around it that
yeah.
goes against that or
right.
that is contrary evidence.
Right.
So that's kind of a real like basic example. But on a more societal, we're making up words. On another, you know, level, there is a confirmation bias of only paying attention to news stories that confirm your views and opinions.
Mm.
Only watching news channels that
right.
already confirm your views and opinions, which is huge in our culture right now. Like literally now people will categorize you based on which news you watch.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I get it. You know, it makes sense why you would. I think sometimes when it's so interesting for me, like when presidential debates are going on,
oh my gosh.
I actually flip through the channels
yeah.
to see how different stations are covering it differently.
Right.
And sometimes you're like, are we watching the same debate?
Yeah.
Like,
right.
Literally different narratives, different ways of narrating stories. There's a great Instagram profile called, I think it's called All Sides Now.
Oh.
Yeah,
okay.
I follow them. I've been following them for a while. And they will literally show like the headlines of recent news and they'll show headlines of like this is how this side reported
wow.
it, this is how this side reported it, and
right.
this is how like the kind of more central side reported it. And
yeah.
that's fascinating because you'll see like, oh, there's already inherent bias
mm-hmm.
in
oh, yeah.
these headlines in the way it's reported.
Right. Yeah.
So that's another example.
Yeah. And that's why, I mean, I think just having the awareness of it and the willingness.
Yes.
Because sometimes, yeah, there are certain news outlets that I'm like, no, I'm not going to listen to that. But I have to stop myself and say like,
yeah,
what is stopping me right now from just seeing, and it doesn't, I don't accept it or believe it
right.
necessarily, but from being exposed to.
Yeah.
And even trying to get into someone else's mindset.
That's what I was saying. And understand the perspective someone else is seeing it from.
Because again, this all comes back down to the humanity of people.
Yeah.
When we dehumanize and when we put people in boxes and we pit people against each other, as easy as it is, and as easy as it is to say, like, oh, you know, the whole confirmation bias.
Yeah.
Oh, I saw them do that. They fit that mold now. I knew it.
I'm categorizing them here.
Right. Like, of course they fit that mold. I mean, that's not even the point. Like, at the end of the day, they're a human that has been shaped by many different circumstances.
Right.
And being willing to say, I will look at other perspectives. I will flip the channel once in a while and practice even the presence and the mindfulness of being able to sit in the discomfort of hearing another perspective that you might completely disagree with.
Yeah.
But sitting in that and accepting that there might be something here that could at least give you an understanding.
That part I was
not that
say.
You have to accept everything. It's not like don't have any values and opinions.
Yeah, exactly. Not what we're saying.
But it allows you at least to see the humanity behind it.
This is kind of where I wish, and I know everyone's trajectory is not to be a therapist or psychologist, but this is where you almost wish everyone in the world kind of went through these types of courses, because these are things that we are trained in, is that if you have clients, you have to set aside your biases, and you constantly have to be checking your biases as a therapist, as a helper, to be a safe space to meet people where they are and to take into context all the intersectionalities that make them who they are and be able to help them from their framework of life and from their worldview that's going to be most helpful for them, you know? And so I think that's what it also comes down to, is what is going to be most fruitful in our relationships, right? And so in order to actually be fruitful, then we do need to be able to meet people where they are. And like you said, sometimes there are a lot of times where I'll have conversations with friends who have very different views than me, but I will sit there, I will listen. And as I hear them, I'm like, it makes sense now to me, like why you think this way. Like it actually makes sense now. Or you'll find that something within there's something that's really important to them. Mm-hmm. A value that's really important to them for a specific reason, you know, it's like, okay, I can see why you feel so strongly about this. Yes. Like it makes sense. Even though I don't agree, it makes, even if you could get to that part, even if I don't agree, it makes sense to me now.
Right.
I can see you as a whole human and how you've gotten to this logic.
And this is something that we work with clients on as therapists, dialectical behavioral therapy.
Yeah.
Two things can be
true at the same time. Ding, ding.
That is so hard, but it is, you know, you can still be a good human.
Right.
And still have a belief that I very much disagree with that might even be a little like hurtful.
And we might even need a little bit of boundaries.
Yes. Boundaries.
That's that part too.
You might need to speak up about something.
Yeah.
But you can also hold the fact that they don't have to be evil necessarily.
They don't have to be evil is a big word. They don't have to be evil. Let's not demonize
people.
But we feel
it, yeah.
Let's not dehumanize. Okay. Oh, one more thing for confirmation bias, because I want to talk about it in terms of our mental health. We can also use confirmation biases in our mental health. And that's when maybe we have these kind of whole statements, these generalization statements about our life, saying like our life is horrible or nothing ever works out for me. And then every time something doesn't work out, you use that situation or experience as a confirmation. Or you might think like, you know, ugh, I don't like this one. Like all men are dogs, like things like that. Right. And then now every time something happens to a friend with a man or something that happens with a man, oh, see, you know, or whatever it is, like we can generalize these about our experiences, about our life. We make these generalizations.
Yeah.
And then we point out things that confirm them. But again, we are discounting the contrary evidence that this is not always true and that there are other examples worth paying attention to. So especially in the case with mental health, with things like anxiety, with things like depression, we actually are often looking at circumstances and we are using them to confirm those kind of perspectives that we're having about our lives and about ourselves.
Right.
And it's a really important part is to, and this is something we do in cognitive behavioral therapy, is to actually try to create a more realistic thinking and challenge ourselves. What are other actually events or experiences that took place in our life mm-hmm. that actually contradict this? Like mm-hmm. we're actually looking for contradictory evidence to our negative thoughts and beliefs
right.
so that we can develop a more realistic view and one that is not maybe so pessimistic
right.
or so ruled by fear. You know, that's another thing about confirmation bias is that it can play a role in mental health and mental health
Absolutely.
Conditions that can cause a lot of distress.
Yeah, that's a really tough place to live in.
Oof, yeah.
When you are in your own head and you have developed a belief that things don't work out for you.
Yeah.
Or that you're not good enough.
Right.
Or that people don't want to hang out with you.
Right. People don't like you.
No one will love you.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? If you hold on to those beliefs, you will look for it.
Yep.
And you will probably
create
mm-hmm. a self-fulfilling prophecy because
yep.
you're looking for it. You're looking for any evidence. You're even creating situations for that to be true just because your mind tells you, hey, look, people don't want to be with you. People, you know, see you in this certain way. And being able to step outside of that mindset and that mm-hmm. way of thinking is so empowering because you are the creator of your own mindset,
your own thoughts,
your own beliefs. You can choose to say, hey, you know what, today I am going to look for something that doesn't confirm this.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm going to do today.
This was heavy with my health anxiety. When I was struggling with health anxiety, this was huge because it was like, at one point, I always thought something was like wrong with my heart or something is wrong with something in my body, you know? And for anyone who has my health anxiety warriors out there who has experienced health anxiety, which is one of the scariest things to experience, you're in and out of the hospital because you think something is wrong with you and you are constantly Googling symptoms.
Wow.
And Google will tell you that you're dying as of yesterday.
Yeah.
Like
right.
you're dying right now, you know? So, especially cases like that with health anxiety, you are kind of looking for things to confirm what's going on with your symptoms,
mm-hmm.
which actually anxiety can create symptoms, which was a big thing that I had to learn was actually if I calm the anxiety, because your body will actually manifest sometimes symptoms based off of your anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
That's an example that I've had in my life where I was actually Googling things that confirm, or when they're like, oh yeah, you know, people are dying younger, you know, if you have death anxiety, okay, and then you see someone in the news, someone this age died again, or this person died again in the news, you're like, oh my gosh, everyone's dying, but no, there's so many more people who are living.
Mm-hmm.
So even just thinking about the fear mongering of like health and death and things in the news, and how those also are playing off of confirmation biases as well, you'll see it in comments where people are like, see, they died because, you know, they got this thing or because this happened, or they're just confirming what they already believe, even often without facts.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's important to be aware of that for ourselves because, again, information is always coming at us.
Mm-hmm.
But we're the ones that get to choose
mm-hmm.
what we see. But we have to be aware of it
mm-hmm.
and practice it. It's a practice.
The next bias is the availability heuristic, which I love because mm-hmm. we do this all the time. I've done this where it's like, yeah, I know this is true because I heard this thing.
Right.
You know, and it's like, where did you hear it from? You don't even remember the source. So the availability heuristic is really having the most immediate available examples that come to mind rather than using broader facts or objective data.
Right.
You know, so it's that system one fast thinking that we were talking about earlier. You know, you're just kind of pulling the first thing that comes to your mind. And there's no real detailed or depth of understanding or learning
mm-hmm.
or searching kind of
mm-hmm.
behind it. A lot of availability heuristics kind of focus on anecdotes in people's stories where you might say, oh, well, you know, if say someone's like, I don't know, having a baby. I don't know why I'm using this anecdote. Say someone's pregnant and it's like, oh yeah, my sister's belly also hung that low and she had a boy. So you're definitely having a boy. Like, you know, there's no truth. There's no facts. You know, you're just like kind of drawing the like quickest anecdote that comes to mind.
Right.
Another one is like with media and news. You're like, see, this thing happened in the news, so it must be happening often all the time. So one is the example of like shark attacks. You know, so on the news, something might come up about shark attacks. And then you might say, oh, didn't you hear? Like, there have been shark attacks. So you never go in the ocean, you know, altogether. You avoid the beach despite there being an incredibly low probability of there ever being a shark attack. It's super low.
Oh, yeah.
So you're just drawing off of kind of the last thing that you heard, you know, without kind of factoring in all these other contexts. So, yeah, that's the availability heuristic. Is basically we're just pulling the first available thing that comes to our mind that relates to the information of what we're talking about, but we still might not have any depth of real like knowledge or understanding or context of objective facts around the situation. We're just kind of in that focus of basing things off of what comes to mind first.
Right. Whatever you just heard about last night on the news or something.
Yeah.
The third bias is the confidence bias. And this one has actually probably affected all of our lives in very real ways.
Tell me about
it. We mistake confidence for truth. So if someone is charismatic,
I'm triggered.
Confident
already.
They can persuade you, then it's like, wow, that must be real. That must be true.
They make it sound true enough.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're saying it so confidently.
And honestly, I've been on both sides.
Yeah.
I'm a very persuasive person, actually.
Is that your persuasive voice?
I can be really persuasive. I was taught to be.
Ooh.
I was trained in sales.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I did trained sales. In public speaking. You present in a certain way and you utilize certain
charisma.
Yes. And voice intonation and pauses and certain words.
Is that what you've been doing us this entire podcast?
Yes. Listen to me. Only me.
Only me.
So, yeah. So it just goes back to this ability to think critically about what someone is saying and just being aware of like, wow, they're a really great speaker or they're really, you know, that sounded so convincing.
So
but is it true?
But is it true?
So I mean, even thinking about church.
Yeah, I was just we're both raised in the church, so that's our availability
church,
heuristic.
I mean,
that's the first thing that
church
comes to mind.
Or politics or any of these
anything,
things. Where it's like these people are literally trained.
You're trained to be that.
The leaders are trained to be persuasive. They're trained to know how to give an altar call. They're trained sometimes in, and without knowing it, in how to motivate human behavior through shame and guilt and certain things like that. And you can be the victim of it. You can also be the person doing it. I was also on the other side of the mic.
Right.
In those days when I did not have this perspective.
Yeah.
And I had this desire for people to love God, know God, accept God.
Right.
But using certain, you know,
that's
tactics.
A slippery slope because you have the right heart or intentions, but it's also clouded by this ego and confidence bias charisma.
Yes, not allowing humans to
be human. Yeah.
There's a little bit of there's a little bit of control.
Just a little.
Just a little bit. A lot of it.
A lot
of that control. And again, that always comes from fear. That control comes from fear. It causes us to use these tactics. And sometimes people are really confident.
Yeah.
I mean, look at marketing. I mean, that's all that marketing is. It's like, I mean, just in general, there's so many ways in which we as humans just have to be so careful.
Yeah.
To check ourselves that we're not being overly confident about things. It's so funny, though, because I totally do this in my life in like little ways.
Yeah.
My little sister, because she'll ask me a question about something. And because I've been trained how to just speak confidently,
right?
Even if I don't quite know what the answer is, I'll be like, I think it's something like this, but I'll say it in such a confident way that she'll be like, oh yeah, that makes sense. And then she'll go back and fact check, like, and we'll both fact check and be like, oh wait, no, never mind. And like, I'll backpedal and she's like, you said that so confident.
So literally fact check our entire conversation.
No, seriously. I mean,
we invite you to. We are not
absolutely
immune from bias.
Absolutely. Because it's it's the way you mean, we can't just sit here and be like, well, I think one of the things that I read was.
You also can't be like not, you also don't want to not exhibit the things that you do know that are helpful. It's just, again, goes back to balance, because there is an importance of healthy confidence. No one's discouraging confidence.
Yes.
You know, but it's, again, that being overestimation aware of confidence and in light of blind spots. Can I also say, though, I think that there is an aspect of this where we are enamored by confident people because we too want to be confident.
Yes.
And so we're hoping that by watching them, by feeding off of them, kind of that confidence will like spill over onto us. And then we'll feel more confident just by kind of transference of experiencing their confidence.
Yeah.
So I think there is a human nature in us of like, maybe we have a deficit of confidence and we don't, maybe we have a low self-esteem, maybe, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And it's like, we want to be more confident like this person,
right?
You know, so we kind of hang on to what they do and what they say. And while there's nothing all bad with that, the only problem is that if you are too enamored by someone's confidence and charisma, you might be blind to, you know, some of the other pitfalls or some of the things that they're saying that might not be true, that might be harmful,
right?
That that you might just not be taking into consideration because they're so confident about what they're saying and doing. You follow them unquestioningly and they just say things kind of unchecked.
Yes. And again, kind of like bringing it back to why this whole conversation even matters.
Right.
Is because we can get swept up into beliefs. Again, it all, like, so much of it comes back down to what are you internalizing from what you're taking in from the world around you? And how is that affecting the way that you see yourself?
Mm.
How does that affect the way that you treat other people?
Yeah.
The way that you, you know, if someone at the pulpit is saying something about a certain group of people.
Or if the Holy Spirit can cause them to jump and shout, but it can't cause them to be nice to people.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean,
the Holy Spirit has enough power for you to get up there and jump and shout and all that, but it doesn't have enough power to just make you
to have
kind,
the fruits of the Spirit.
To have the actual fruits of how, and of course, we're not talking about all people. I know a lot of leaders who have the fruits and are confident and are great teachers. But again, we're talking about areas of blindness with certain people where it's like, again, to me, it's like, I don't care how confident you are on that stage. Fruit all day, looking at the fruits. Like, how do you actually treat people? How do you actually see people? How do you actually love people? Do you dehumanize and villainize and trash people?
Build walls?
Or do you actually have a heart? That comes across not only in what you say, but in how you're actually treating the people you interact with.
Yeah. You know, and I think that's why faith and religion is such a huge topic, is because, you know, for the most part, we all still have those roots. We all still, that's a huge influence for a lot of people, because it's for many a matter of life and death, salvation. Those are massive things. Life after
death is a really big
all of those
motivator.
Things. Yes. So it's like, it's you're even more vulnerable when it comes to faith and religion. And same with politics. You know, there are a lot of implications. Yeah. There's a lot of, it's high stakes.
High stakes stuff.
So what are our takeaways from
this? So many takeaways.
Conversation.
Apart from knowing biases, I think that we all have to recognize that we have them. That is kind of the first step to overcoming biases.
Yes.
Is nobody is completely unbiased. If you think that you have no biases, you are actually in on the slippery slope of acting from your biases without realizing it because you don't have any awareness around the ways in which you're biased. To be able to say, you know what? I am more biased to think this way, or I am more biased to look at this, or I am more biased to watch things that affirm with this. So of course I'm going to think this way, or this is why I'm approaching things this way. Therefore, how can I actually step outside of my bias to see things from someone else's point of view, to see things from someone else's perspective? You can only step outside of your bias and be that person, be that link, be that connection if you are first willing to recognize that you have one and accept that you have one. And we're all going to have them because of the ways that we've been shaped, brought up, because of our cultures, because of what we've been taught, because of our beliefs.
Right.
You know, so that is the first thing is, you know, the more you are aware of your biases, the more you can work on them, the more you can pause and objectively take things into context.
Yeah. Yeah. I think my takeaway is I always come back to our own sense of self, because I think whatever goes on internally is really what comes out.
Yeah.
And what interacts with the rest of the world. And so I think one of the reasons it's so important to be aware of our prejudices, our biases, our belief systems that we've been given and handed.
Yeah.
It's important to be aware of them and start really appraising them and breaking them down and seeing what actually is healthy for us now, because it affects how we view ourselves and it affects how we feel our sense of value and worth comes from, where our sense of value and worth comes from. And that in turn 100% affects how I see you, how I feel about you, how I view you. Because it's not sometimes these big, massive things that make a difference. It's the micro.
Yes.
I mean, we'll talk about all of this stuff later, but like microaggressions. I mean, it's a huge word.
It's its own. Yeah.
But that's where it comes from.
Exactly.
It comes from the biases. Way I feel and view you, and it comes out subconsciously.
Yeah.
And you don't know it. But you are treating someone in a way you wouldn't treat them if you genuinely saw them as a human that was of equal value to you, exactly. No matter what, where they came from, where they grew up, what they believe, all of that. And this is, I'm talking to myself.
Right.
Because I think of people in my mind, or types of people in my mind, maybe they're people that have even hurt me.
Yeah.
Those are the hardest people to see as human, because you are the one.
You are the enemy.
You're the enemy. And I don't want to like you, or
I don't want to know you as a human.
Right. But that's very black and white, because what the parts of them that hurt me or the parts of their beliefs that hurt
me. That's a challenge. Yeah.
Are just parts of them.
I don't like it. It's true, but I don't like it.
Yeah. We'll just sit in this discomfort.
We'll sit in this discomfort.
For a moment.
Okay. Moment of silence for the discomfort.
Okay.
We're done. And we're back.
That's to me the biggest takeaway is like, however you relate to yourself is how you're automatically going to relate to other people. So.
Okay. My quick last takeaway. So lastly, solutions to being unbiased. I think, you know, approaching the world with curiosity, being open to learning, also being willing to slow down, especially in this social media world where so many things are coming at you and a lot of high, you know, emotional things of high emotional content are coming at you, and you want to respond quickly, even though you don't know the wholeness of things that are going on, you know. If you feel compelled, if you feel convicted to share your thoughts, you know, don't let us stop you. But just keeping that in mind. Also, being willing to surround yourself with a diversity of people. I think some of us grew up in cultures where it's just like you stick with your people and, you know, make sure you protect yourself from people who think differently than you, you know, because you don't want their thinking to rub off on you. You know what I mean? Type of thing. As someone who has just grown up around diversity, you know, it's just like, I think the more you're actually around diversity, the more you can say, oh, it's okay for me to have my thoughts, feelings, convictions, and beliefs and navigate those around me still with love. Like, that's how you practice that.
Right.
Is by surrounding yourself with more people and learning more about those. Yeah. And I think lastly is just to stay humble in these streets. You know, just the more humble we are, the less biased we're going to be, because we're going to be more willing to learn We're going to be more willing to kind of set aside our biases for a moment just to understand kind of the perspectives that people end up coming to.
Yeah.
And that there's things that we still don't know, and being willing to, like you said earlier, say, I don't know. I need to learn more. I don't have a fully formed thought about this yet.
Yes.
You know, I'll get back to you on that, you know?
Yeah. And the word that I love when you said humble, the word that I thought of was curious.
I love that word.
And that's one of my curiosity. Words for this year has been one of my words is just a curious mindset. Because if you're curious, there's so much to learn still.
Yeah.
And there's so much to, you know, take in and be excited about.
Yeah.
Versus I already made a judgment.
Mm-hmm.
And, but when you're curious, you're open.
And you feel more safe
as
a human being.
I love that.
On that note, we hope you guys enjoyed this conversation. These are the types of conversations that we want to have. Just more layered, more thoughtful, more in-depth, you know? And that's the goal. So thank y'all for listening.
Thank you for being here and for choosing and attempting to have an open mindset about yourself and about life.
Stay curious. Until next time. Hey, if you enjoyed today's episode, let's continue the conversation and stay connected on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, or YouTube, all linked in the show notes below. Let us know your thoughts or leave a review on the podcast. Your feedback really does mean so much to us. Until next time.